If you can create a culture where you don't tolerate that waste, there's always these little improvements that you make within your business that gradually add up to some very big numbers. But there are some statistics I've read around waste, and there's a statistic that approximately a third of your cost is wasted, or a third of your time is wasted. And I reckon that's probably about right in my experience as well.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent Magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.
Hey, hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent. Many of you would have been saying to yourselves sometime around the new year that this is going to be my year for growth. But growth doesn't always mean adding more. Sometimes it can mean not cutting costs necessarily, but reducing waste in your business and becoming, as we say in the brief of a morning, more productive. My guest this week is probably one of the coolest accountants on the planet, if you can use the expression cool and accountant in the same sentence. It's John Knight, the CEO of Business Depot, a full-service business consulting and accounting firm in Brisbane. In this podcast, we cover a whole heap of debatable topics, including the pros and cons of selling principles, how to create a culture of accountability in your business, the best question to ask new recruits, and simple ways of raising the bar this year without upending your worlds completely. There are lots of takeaways in this one, including John's very entertaining story of the three Russian brothers and their cousin, which is in fact an actionable workshop idea you can run with your team to set direction for your business this year. Enjoy the podcast. Okay, welcome to the podcast, John Knight.
Hi, Sam. Thanks for having me along.
Awesome to have you along. I mean, you've been a regular in Elite Agent for, pretty much since day one, I think.
Pretty much.
Yeah, with your amazing knowledge and things like that of real estate firms, because up there at Business Depot in Brisbane, where you are right now, you do a lot of work with real estate companies all around the country. And I know people love your column, which is very business focused. So first of all, thank you for your contributions over the years.
My pleasure.
We're going to get into the leadership diaries a little bit further on, but I wanted to have a bit of a talk to you about what you're seeing in the marketplace, some of the trends you're seeing and how they're impacting businesses at the moment.
There are some challenges out there that business owners are dealing with. And the trend, I suppose, that I'm seeing is that business owners are having a good, hard look at their businesses at the moment. And I suppose one of the things I'm encouraging them to do is to focus on what they can do to make their business better, rather than just this continued focus on more. I always love the quote, better is better than more, because over the years, different real estate groups and so forth, different individual businesses have always had a huge growth focus. And often growth can solve a lot of problems in businesses. But I'm feeling like we're at a bit of a different stage in the industry at the moment. We can't just keep pushing more through. We actually need to fix some of the machines that we're operating through at the moment. So that involves things like looking at the efficiency of the business. It actually involves looking at the business model as well. And when I talk about business model, I always love to break it down into how important is the property management division to the business? How important is the sales business? How important are principal sales within the business as well? Also, we're starting to have a lot more discussions around these adjacent services that people can add in and hook up with to meet more of the needs of their clients.
I think that's a really interesting one, because I've heard anecdotally, I can't remember where the statistic came from, but when we move house is a time when we spend the most money on pretty much everything around us. And so that in itself is a big opportunity for real estate businesses, correct?
Well, it is. And when you move house is when you're going to think about all those other things going on in your life, aren't you? You know, you're going to think about the loan, because if you're buying a house potentially, or even if you're renting, you're going to be thinking about, you know, your insurances and those types of things. And usually when you're moving house, there's something else going on in your life as well. You know, sometimes you're looking to simplify life. Sometimes you've had some more children. You need a bit more room to move. There's all those different types of things that make that point of changing your house a good time to think about everything else that's going on.
So even though it might seem that the market is slowing down, there's actually a lot more opportunities that are coming around.
Yeah, I mean, I love the idea of I think we can get deeper with the relationships with our clients. Even some of the opportunities that are already there within your business. You know, I still see businesses where the sales team and the property management team aren't collaborating and cooperating as much as they should be. And they're leaving value on the table for the agency by not getting those teams working together. And that's before you even think about things like mortgage broking and insurance and other services.
Yeah, absolutely. So if it's not more, which you just said, which it's not necessarily more of, it's becoming more efficient. You wrote this great article about looking at the areas of wastage in your business because, it's not necessarily about cutting costs either. It's about reducing waste. Tell me about some of the things where real estate agents can reduce their areas of waste.
Yeah. So I love talking about waste because the word waste itself has such a negative connotation to it that people don't like it and they want to deal with it. So it's the reverse of efficiency discussion. But a cost or an investment that you make is only wasted if you don't get value out of it. So it's not about cutting costs. And I'm probably the last person that comes in and goes, cut costs, cut costs, cut costs. We just have to make sure we're getting as much value out of the cost. Those seven wastes are from the Toyota model, hence why those wastes are very much, I suppose, framed around a production line. But they are just as relevant to real estate as they are with any other business that's out there. For example, if you think about unnecessary motion, and you think about someone with a rent roll business. Now, if your rent roll is geographically dispersed far and wide, then you've got this roll, this wasted time where you've got to get in your car and you've got to drive kilometres and kilometres away to enable you to go and do the inspection or whatever it is that you need to do. Defects. I mean, what sort of defects do we get in a real estate business? If someone gets that advertisement wrong within the paper and they put the wrong open house time on or something or other, then you've got this extreme amount of waste in that you potentially have lost a sale or potentially lost a tenant to go on in. I love talking about defects within real estate businesses, and often I'll do workshops around waste. And when I ask the audience, you know, give me an example of a defect within your business, quite often there's usually someone in the room that puts their hand up and says, people, you know, this person on reception doesn't do a good job or they get the forms wrong and those types of things. But if you go through all seven of those, there are heaps of examples where if you think about it from a real estate perspective, you could be doing something, spending time on something, because time is the biggest thing that's wasted, that is not actually delivering any rewards for you. Again, inventory. Now, your inventories are your properties under management, are your listings ready to sell. Now, if you're holding properties to sell there and your vendor has unrealistic expectations and you're unable to move it, then it does cost for you to continue to hold that as inventory within your business.
So when you do these workshops with people around waste and areas of waste in their business, how much waste are you likely to find on any given day?
Look, I take the approach of a continuous improvement approach and working towards creating a culture that does not tolerate waste. And so that means, you know, yes, you deal with some big things up front, but if you can create a culture where you don't tolerate that waste, there's always these little improvements that you make within your business that gradually add up to some very big numbers. But there are some statistics I've read around waste, and there's a statistic that approximately a third of your cost is wasted, or a third of your time is wasted. And I reckon that's probably about right in my experience as well.
I had my wallet stolen a couple of weeks ago and had to cancel all my credit cards, and I found all these subscriptions I didn't need. It was amazing.
Well, subscriptions is one of those very simple things that I recommend people at least once a year get all their bank statements and run their finger down all the transactions and remind yourself as to what subscriptions you got coming out every month. And it's a very simple exercise. But, you know, I had an iTunes subscription roll over again last month, and it was a 12-monthly subscription, another $90 gone, and I don't even use that app. And it's only $90, but if you've got a culture, again, of not tolerating waste, it creates the right actions to continually roll along, continually improve.
What do you think are some of the quick wins for people listening out there? What are some of the quick things that they could do to make a difference other than the obvious subscriptions?
The quick things that I would start with is doing an exercise I call raise the bar. You can apply it to any metric within your business. But let's start by looking at the number of sales done per salesperson per month. Now, I do this on a whiteboard, but you could do it in an Excel spreadsheet or wherever you like, and simply map across the bottom each salesperson within your team and then put on the graph the different dots for the number of sales that they do on average per month. Now, if we then draw an average line across the middle, we can then focus on those that are below the line. Now, I'm not going to advocate that you sack those guys and you get rid of them because, you know, we've got to invest our team, we've got to empower them, we've got to engage them. But let's have that discussion. Let's know the reality that they are below the average performance. Now, the beauty is that some of those people, maybe they just need some training. Maybe they just need some support. Maybe they need some new systems to sort of help them be more efficient. But if we can improve the performance of those below the average, then the average bar is going to grow. So I like doing the average number of sales per person per month. And I also like looking at the rent roll portfolios as well and how many properties under management and apply that same sort of exercise in there as well. Often that second one results in a review of the properties that we are acting for and potentially even sacking some of the landlords that we have so that we're not wasting time on those that aren't bringing in any money and typically cause our property managers a heap of grief.
Does the 80-20 rule work in real estate?
I reckon the 80-20 rule works in most things, Sam. Yeah. I absolutely think, you know, if you looked at the bottom 20% of your rent roll, of your properties under management, I think that's a really good place to start when looking at waste.
And speaking of waste, there's another one of your lessons that some of the guys might be interested in about reviewing things at the end of the year. And I think it has something to do with those Russian brothers of yours.
I always love talking about the Russian brothers, and the Russian brothers, the formal name is the three Russian brothers and their cousin. And what we do with the Russian brothers is it's a very neat tool that you can use on a big picture strategy level, or you can use it on an individual performance sort of level as well. And really it is quite simple, and it's just looking at what do we need to do more of? That's brother number one. What do we need to do less of? What do we need to get rid of? And the cousin, what else would we like to toss into the mix? And now if you apply that exercise, I often do that as a workshop exercise. Now you can workshop that with your team and just ask for their insights. What do we need to do more of? What do we need to do less of? What do we need to get rid of? And what other strategies or what other things do we want to toss into the mix? I'd like to use that in somewhat of a matrix sort of way so that we make sure that we don't just keep adding more. We don't just keep tossing in new strategies unless we get less of something or we get rid of something. And of course, the getting rid of brother is probably the hardest one to deal with because it's not we're just going to do less of something. It is we're going to stop doing this. And if we can get a discussion with our teams or even at an individual level, a discussion with an individual, what are you going to stop doing so that you can do these other things that you want to do?
Because often you find yourself doing a lot of things just because you've done them in the past or they've always been done this way and you haven't stopped to think about the why.
Here's a little thing. So one of my New Year's resolutions was to say no before I say yes. Now that sounds a little bit negative, I know, but I purposely wanted to really test any of the new things that I took on because my day was full. And so I had to actually say no before I just renewed a board position or before I just renewed an invitation to speak at an event and really challenged myself before I said yes.
Interesting strategy. I might try that one myself. So, John, this is part of a series we've been doing called the Leadership Diaries. So you're the leader of Business Depot. How many are in the team now up there?
Yeah, the team across all our different business units now is up to 48. So the whole concept of Business Depot is to be that one place for business. And within that, you could say there's the Real Estate Business Depot in that of all those different business units, they all have somewhat of a real estate expertise to go along with that. So within our accounting, our consulting, our coaching, our superannuation, our legal, our marketing, and our agency broking teams, we're now lucky enough to have 48 people on the books helping real estate agents and other businesses achieve whatever it is they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, amazing. All right, so are you ready?
All right. So what was your first job and what did it teach you?
My first job was at a mechanics warehouse or a mechanics shed, sorry. So I literally would go around there after school, put some overalls on. I'd have to clean up all the oil that was spilt. Or the favourite part of my job was emptying the bins and taking them out the back to the incinerator and burning them. And that would have been about 15, I think, at the time.
And was that what made you want to go into accounting or made you want to be a consultant?
Accounting for me, and which is really my core foundational sort of knowledge, which has evolved into the consulting, was really just because I knew I wanted to help business. And, you know, as they always say, you know, accounting is a great base for anyone who wants to work in business. My old man was an electrician, but I knew very early on that I didn't want to be an electrician. And I'm somewhat of a disappointment because I didn't become the electrician and take over the family business.
Well, it's okay because I didn't become a truck driver, so we're good. What does the first day of your day look like? Are you a 5 a.m. clubber?
Yeah, I sort of am. When I wake up, I like to just get up. And these used to be that I'd go for a run, but, you know, getting a bit older and the back's not really allowing that these days, but I do like to just get up and get going.
Can you name someone that's had a big impact on you as a leader?
I had a mentor by the name of Wayne Patterson. Wayne was just a mentor that I found, and he helped me a lot with the setup of Business Depot. Unfortunately, he got diagnosed with motor neurone disease and passed away. But for me, he was a role model. He was a guiding light, a mentor. The way he approached business and the way he approached people, I'll never forget, and I'll always apply those principles in everything that I do.
What's the most important thing that you're working on right now and how you're making that happen?
We made a conscious decision a little while ago to focus on the expansion of our services before focusing on offices in the other states. We're already servicing businesses in the other states. And so one of the key things we're working on at the moment is filling the gaps with the other services. And that doesn't necessarily have to be service we must provide ourselves. It may be through collaboration, but to make sure that if we're calling ourselves Business Depot, we need to make sure that we are able to direct people as appropriate for whatever the problem is that they come up against.
Actually, this is a good question for you, talking about brothers and cousins. Where do great ideas in your business come from?
I think great ideas quite often come from a very random left field sort of place. I'm very much an open book, hard on the sleeve, just say what you're thinking kind of guy. And so I love the random discussions around strategy, the random discussions around business. I love open workshops with the team to come up with different things. I do get ideas out of the podcast that I'm listening to these days, but often they come to my head at 3 o'clock in the morning rather than when I'm actually in a workshop and trying to think of the idea. I think ideas permeate from so many sources, and it's just something that triggers them all to come together at that one point in time. So my team are a massive inspiration as well as to where ideas come from for what we're doing here at Depot.
Yeah, so that's interesting what you just said, is that you have trouble thinking of great ideas when you're in the thick of it, but when you take a step back, that's when usually they come together.
And look, I put a lot of value on making sure you've got that mindful time. That's usually that 5 o'clock in the morning sort of time for me. It's that going for a walk while it's dark outside or something or other that I find, or sitting on a plane, I find really mindful as well, where you don't have anything else that you have to be doing and you really do just open your mind to what's going on around you and consciously don't look for something. And that's when I find the ideas come.
I think that's good advice for all entrepreneurs out there, actually. Give yourself some brain space. What's your favourite question to ask someone in a job interview, and what does their answer tell you about them?
Yeah, I mean, I always take the approach in job interviews to get them talking as much as they possibly can at the beginning. So other than the usual sort of warm-up questions, which I think can often be the best to actually show a bit about the person, I like asking the very simple question, what does the ideal job look like for you? Because if we can ask that very early in the interview sort of stage, when they're not just trying to say what they think you want to hear, I think you can work out whether we're aligned or not pretty quickly.
Does that change if you were a real estate principal? Like, what is a key thing that you think real estate principals should be asking candidates in a job interview? Because it is tough to find good people at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we ask business owners, which I think principals would be valuable in asking their agents, is what's important to you out of income, equity, or control? And those three things, even if you do a bit of a weighting between those three, will provide some sort of indication as to what's going to be most important for them in that role that they're applying for with you in your real estate agency.
Interesting, because that topic of equity comes up a lot. So it might be a good way to keep someone rather than having them move on to another agency.
Yeah, precisely. And that control, don't underestimate the importance of control for people. And especially in the real estate industry, we see so many people in the real estate industry because they want to be in control of their own destiny. They want to be in control of how much they earn within the business. And so sometimes people just inherently have within them that they want to open their own business at some point in time. But for others, it's not important. And they just want to make good income on the way through and not have to worry about any of the other concerns along the way.
If someone did come in and say control is more important to me than, say, equity or money, what should you keep in mind for the rest of the interview?
Well, I think what I'd be keeping in mind is we know where this person wants to go, or we've got a better idea of where this person wants to go. So let's now focus on the steps to get you there. So we might be open to the idea of doing a 50-50 venture with them down the track or something like that. So therefore, to get to a 50-50 venture, what do you need to do first? First, we need to know, like, and trust each other before we even do anything like that. So how do we develop that? How do we get confidence in your performance? All those types of things before ultimately we can have a plan to get to where that person wants to get to, provided that matches with ours as well.
Very clever. What is one characteristic you think every leader needs today?
I harp on so much about emotional intelligence. Real estate businesses, my business, they are people businesses more than anything else. And if we can empower our teams to be the best that they can be, we are going to have great businesses ourselves. And so emotional intelligence is one of those things that I don't think people necessarily completely understand what it is. But what I think of when I think about emotional intelligence, I talk about understanding the different personalities of the people that we're dealing with, creating those opportunities for open, transparent communication. I think of vulnerable trusts, safe environments, all those types of things. If we can understand the people that we're working with, I think we can grow the IQ. But if we understand the people that we're working with, I think that's where businesses get the best results.
Keeping people happy. I think they call it like team experience now or something. There's brand experience, customer experience, team experience. And
absolutely. I mean, it's engagement, it's empowerment, it's experience. You know, what's important, if you know what's important to them as individuals, then you can take that into account in the overall sort of strategy. Or it helps you understand why they may be behaving a certain way. And that's how I sort of started with a lot of the personality profiling type work, is we actually had some individuals in a team that forever were banging their heads against each other. And so we started by helping them understand each other's personalities, and you see the light bulbs go off in their head and say, well, that's why when you do that, it really frustrates me. And that's why when I react like that, it's negative rather than positive.
This is an interesting question for you. It's about getting a new employee to understand the culture of your business, because you're what I would consider to be a cool accountant.
Like, shucks, thank you.
It's like Business Depot is not your traditional accounting firm.
So our office in itself tells part of the story around our culture. So we purposely are in an office in the fringe of Brisbane, James Street, the Fortitude Valley, which is a pretty cool sort of part of the Brisbane inner city. We purposely are on the first floor, so you purposely can walk up the stairs so that it's a very human thing. You don't have to park downstairs and pay for parking, get a lift upstairs. And when you walk up the stairs, you pretty much walk into an open, transparent sort of environment. So you've got the reception to the left and you've got the kitchen to the right. And so often that tells a really strong story. We've got nothing to hide. Clients, prospects will go sit at the kitchen bench, which is always a bit of a nice, warm sort of place to sit. And staff might be using the soda stream, or they might be making a smelly tuna salad, or they might be having a cup of coffee. But for the clients or for the people sitting there at the bench, it's very real, it's very transparent, it's very human. So number one answer to your question would be, I do believe the workspace is really important for the culture. And we make sure that we have breakout spaces in different areas where we create those casual bump-ins with people. The other thing we do is I think it is absolutely critical that you document, reinforce, talk about all the time what is important in your business. And they essentially become your rules. They're usually based off your values, but they are the rules of your business. So we have what we call our That's Depo statements, rather than calling it value statements. We have our That's Depo statements. And the idea of that is it creates this culture where everyone can hold each other accountable really easily. So, you know, one of our That's Depo statements is give a shit. And that's around give a shit about your teammates, give a shit about your clients, give a shit about everyone that you're dealing with. And so, you know, if something goes on or someone says something and they don't feel it's in accordance with that depo statement, then it creates this accountability where they'll go, John, well, hang on a second, don't forget the fun, you know, those types of things.
Yeah, well, that's not depo.
That's not depo, exactly.
What advice would you give someone going into a leadership position for the first time? Let's just talk in general first.
I'd probably invest in your EQ. I think that would be my number one sort of tip I would say to a leader or someone going into a leadership position. Make sure you understand yourself as a person and invest in your emotional intelligence and your ability to get to know the team around you, because I think that is one of the most important leadership traits to do that.
And what about in real estate?
I'd probably take that emotional intelligence comment probably to a deeper level, specifically for the real estate agents. And I would say build trust. And building trust takes time. And if you can go to the extent of building vulnerable trust with the people that you are leading, then that is even better. So whether you're going into a sales manager role or a principal role or something like that, I see what people get wrong is they don't take the time to build the trust. Sometimes they feel, I've got the history, I've got the expertise, I deserve you to treat me like a leader. You actually have to earn that respect. And I think you only get that by building trust in the first instance.
This is a question that I know you probably answer a lot, but in the real estate industry, it's quite unusual that you might have a leader who's a selling principal. And effectively, I'm not going to say selling against salespeople, but it does happen. How do you balance that with a degree of emotional intelligence?
I think that's a really tricky one. I get asked about that quite a bit because I'm one of those advisors that it all depends on the individual as to whether that business model suits you or not. Okay, obviously, there's some financial considerations in there as well. And you can't go past the fact that a selling principal makes a great margin on the sales that they do themselves. What's important, though, is that how they go about being that selling principal, they have to make sure the team understand why they are still being a selling principal in my mind. And so what I mean by that is that it might be financial. If it is, I'd sort of say, well, I'd love to build the team to four more agents, but I haven't got four more agents, so I've got to sell some properties myself. Or make it so that the other agents can see the benefit of you being a selling principal as well. One of the biggest benefits I see is that a selling principal gets a lot more signs out there. It has a lot more profile, and all these other agents can piggyback on it and use it as a springboard for their own career. How many top agents have been the PA for a selling principal and learnt how to do it, learnt the mastery of the craft, and being able to then apply that for their own situations? I'm a big advocate that selling principal businesses are not necessarily a bad thing.
So that's good advice. What is the worst advice you've ever heard given to someone starting in a leadership role in real estate?
I might change your question slightly, and I'll talk about a specific situation that I remember. I had a phone call one day from a client, or a potential client was referred to us by a franchise group. And they were ringing me and they were saying, look, John, I think it's too late. I owe the tax office $1 million and I think I'm going to have to go into administration and into insolvency. We went out and we spoke with that agency. They did owe the tax office $1 million, but it wasn't as dire when we dug deeper into that. And what we found was these individuals had bought an agency and they actually did the right thing and went and got advice from an accountant and a lawyer around buying it. But they got it from an accountant who did not know real estate. And so when this person went to buy this real estate business, the accountant said, well, it's no different to a hairdresser down the road, pay three times profit for the business. So they started by paying way more than what the business was worth. They were advised to go in the wrong type of structure for their business, and they didn't put any money aside for tax along the way. So the worst advice, I think, can come from those places where if they just don't have the awareness of that industry or what's important for that type of business, then they can presume that it is apples and apples when actually it's apples and oranges.
So basically, check that the advice you're getting is from someone that has had experience in the industry and that it's on the basis of your personal situation.
Precisely. It has to be customised to your situation, your industry, your business, even your location, because there's subtle differences between states and cities and so forth as well.
Do you have any tips or advice for the new year?
New Year's are always a time for reflection. And so this is my constant advice every new year, is take the time to reflect before you just power into the new year. And so I encourage people to do a exercise with their team, to their wider team, ideally before the new year. But what I find is people can't actually get themselves into the headspace of the new year until 1 January actually sort of ticks over. And the little workshop I love doing, I call the good, the bad, the ugly workshop. And it's pretty simple. You just get everyone in a room and we talk about, I usually mind map it. What's been good? What's happened that we find really positive? What's been bad or what's been not so good? What are those areas of improvement? And then I get the whole team to score of everything on there. I give them all three ticks and we come up with the biggest, ugliest things in there that we have to fix, or the biggest things that if we could improve would set us alight for the year ahead. And that is a really solid foundation for your plans for the year ahead before you even get into the how we do that side of things.
It sounds like awesome advice. John Knight, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your knowledge with us.
My absolute pleasure, Sam. Great talking to you again.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.